Mr. Snow.
After everything you've seen out there in the world, what are the Hunger Games for?
Are you coming to the tree?
The Hunger Games, they're to punish the districts. Those tributes don't have a choice.
Your role is to turn these children into spectacles, not survivors.
Da 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 da!
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy.
Are you serious?
Wait, even germs?
Yeah. It's showtime.
That's fun.
It's the return to Panem America.
I can solve this whole Pan-Pam thing.
That's great. That's great. Thanks. I was confused. So you can give us some insight on this. We're talking The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. That would fit real well, I feel like, with Rise of the Dawn of the War for the etc. But we'll leave it at that. It's the prequel to a very successful franchise, one of the more successful franchises of the Mad About Movies era, actually, which is how I think everybody refers to this decade.
Yeah, it's the golden era of Hollywood, you know, classic Hollywood, the golden era. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Peak TV era. Yeah.
Peak TV and then Mad About Movies era.
That's good. I'm Brian Gill, joined as always by Kit Garrison and Richard Barton, my lovely co-hosts, boys. Good to be here. Good to talk to you guys. Hope you guys had an enjoyable Thanksgiving break and such. Listeners, you as well. And if you're in Canada, hope you had a nice week last week. This has been
By the way, you guys big Thanksgiving guys? Number one holiday for me, by the way.
I like Thanksgiving. I'm a Christmas guy overall, but I like Thanksgiving. The thing with Thanksgiving for me that's a little much is it's a lot of people, it's a lot of gatherings in a short period of time. I feel like for me, at least, this may be a little bit unique to me given my job schedule and everything like that. But Christmas gatherings and whatnot are more spread out. So like Thanksgiving week, one of the reasons we didn't record last week was I literally had Wednesday night off. That was it. Every other night, like Friday night through the Sunday night after Thanksgiving, I had something every single night, and Wednesday night's usually like my prep night for getting stuff ready for Thanksgiving meals and all that kind of stuff. So super, super slammed. And then Christmas, it's like it's the same a number of activities probably and gatherings and whatnot, but it's spread out over 2.5 weeks instead of 1 week or whatever. So but I dig the concept. You guys have a good week?
Yeah.
I don't know where you guys were on Thanksgiving, but I know where you weren't. And that was seeing Wish.
I saw Wish the day after Thanksgiving.
Oh, so yeah, you did. You're one of the one of the 10 that saw it.
Yeah.
It had original songs.
Yeah.
Are they tired of getting knocked off on Wish.com and this is just their way to combat that? Is this a T-Swift Jets scenario?
Maybe, man.
So you Google Disney Frozen, you know, and so now you can't find Walt Disney's frozen head. So now Disney Wish, you ain't finding anything on Wish.com.
It's perfect. It's a good strategy, except it made no money. So I don't know that it's gonna happen. But maybe the news is all that matters.
We need to do some kind of college course on what is going on with Disney. And this would be an amazing movie to dissect why over Thanksgiving it made $30 million. It's pretty amazing.
It's a bad year overall for Disney. I believe I saw that the highest grossing movie of 2023 for Disney was Avatar, which came out last year. So that's you've not done
wait,
well.
Wait, what? Say that again?
Pretty sure. Now if I'm wrong, you know, somebody can correct us. Avatar 2 has made like $250-ish million this year, and I believe that was the highest grossing movie on domestically, or wouldn't it top five?
Yes, yeah.
Because Little Mermaid did well, so it can't have been. Maybe it was domestic. I don't know. I'll have to.
And here's the thing: James Cameron still owns that. He just licenses, or Disney just distributes it.
Yeah.
It's not even like a true Disney right. production.
Right. Yeah. It's tough. Iger had a big meeting with the shareholders today, so we'll see. But it's going to take a while. It's not going to fix itself overnight, for sure. So there's a lot of things that need to be taken care of. We're not talking Wish tonight. We are talking this Hunger Games prequel. Do you guys, let's start here. Do you remember the Hunger Games movies? Do you care about the Hunger Games? Are they movies you've rewatched? I'll start with you, Kent. Hunger Games Legacy, go.
They are not movies I have really revisited.
They're super fun.
I have fond memories of them. It's not one that I was expecting or necessarily hoping for another reboot of, but here we are. Sure. I find myself really intrigued by the premise, and I think of a lot of these young adult adaptation franchises, this is probably my favorite in terms of the actual world building or the plot of the Hunger Games themselves, the actual games, I find pretty interesting. There's not a lot of fantasy element to it, which I enjoy, and maybe they try to cram a little bit too much of that into this to make it fantasy versus just, I don't know, dystopian sci-fi. But I have fond memories of the originals. I really liked J-Lost. For some reason, saw all of those in the theater. I remember seeing every single one of those with friends.
It was the show, right?
Yeah, 12. The first one... The first one came out in 12, I think. So it was pretty.
I don't think we did the first one. I know we did Catching Fire and Mockingjay.
Mockingjay ones, yeah.
Yeah, very fond memories of them and Katniss. And like I said a few weeks ago, I think Hutcherson has something. So looking back at that, I think that's a good call. This, though, I wasn't fond of the idea of a reboot.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to say, this cast is way better than the original cast, in my opinion, as an ensemble.
Yeah. You know what's funny? Like, I rewatched these maybe the 2 weeks or so leading up to this movie, because Cooper had never seen them and he was kind of interested in this movie. So we watched those. By the time you get to, like,
how do you like them? It's pretty dark for him. Right?
Yeah, he didn't really dig the first one, but I was like, look, if you don't like Catching Fire, that's totally, if you're out after that one, then that's totally fine. We don't have to watch Mockingjays, but Catching Fire is like a pretty good, like legitimately good action movie in addition to this kind of entry. And he really dug that one. And that kind of was like, okay, I'm in. But yeah, he was a little bummed out by kids killing kids. It's weird. He's kind of soft.
Woke agenda.
Yeah, for sure.
Targeting on youth. That's what kid on kid death.
but Kent, by the end of Mockingjay, there was a point where I like turned to Lindsay and I was like, there's like five Oscar winners on screen right now. Like it's
yeah, I did have Hoffman.
Yeah, it gets Philip Seymour Hoffman, Julianne Moore, A Mother to Us All, Mahershala Ali, and J-Law and Woody are all on screen at one time. You know, wow, that's pretty. Yeah. It's a pretty impressive.
I think the combo of
too in there,
and Jeffrey Wright too. He doesn't have one. He may get one this year or nomination anyway. But
Jeffrey Wright is great. Yeah, he's coming on. I think the combo of Zegler, Viola Davis, Dinklage, and Schwartzman, awesome. Just perfect people. Every time they're on screen, they're awesome. I wanted more of them. Wish there was more of them. And that's probably one of my main complaints. In a 2.5-hour movie, way too much love story, walking and talking for me. There's so much interesting about this world, the politics of it, the reasoning for it, that I wanted more. Maybe they want to lean more into the kid, the PG-13 element, like the, you know, high school element of the story, rather than let's get adults talking and lean into what adults want to see with this movie. But I think if they did that, if there was an R-rated version of this with Dinklage and Viola Davis and everybody, I think it would do pretty well.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
Isn't the audience for this old now, though? Like, what, Hunger Games was 2012. That's 11 years ago. So if you were 15 when you saw that,
sure,
you're probably wanting an R-rated one. I don't know. They're trying to get a new audience with this. What is the thinking there? It's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Suzanne Collins is a YA author, so the book is YA just as much as this movie is. So there's, I mean, that may be some of the deal too. Maybe some of it is you want it to fit with the vibe of the other movies because it is a franchise or whatever. And I get that too. I'm fine with where it ended up. I read the book like a couple of weeks ago. I had initially said I'm not going to because I didn't think Suzanne Collins is a particularly good author. I think she's fine, but I didn't think those books were great. I thought they were a great idea and concept and kind of middling execution at times. And also, you know, my wife was really excited when that book came out. She was like, she can't wait to read it, and got it on Audible immediately and all this. And I was like, I don't really need the sob story on why a terrible child murdering dictator became a child murdering dictator. Like, that's just not of any interest to me. I don't really understand what the value of this concept is. And she kept being like, it's not really that. Like, if you read it, you'd understand. I was like, I don't really. But I did go ahead and read it a couple of weeks ago because I was out of Audible credits. And I was like, it's fine. I'll check this out. And she's right. Like, it did. The book does a good job. And you kind of see it in the movie here. And we'll get into it here in a second. But it's not just a sob story about why this guy turns into a terrible child murdering dictator. It's more about he was probably always kind of a bad person the whole time. Yeah. And you just kind of see that come out more and more throughout the course of the book. I don't know if it successfully translates that on screen, but that was
a charming actor.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
sure.
I mean, like, sure. And to his credit.
Yeah.
It's like that guy did I don't know if he did a good job. But yeah. He was good.
So this was one of my, and then I want to get your general thoughts overall, Arby, and we'll go from there. One of my concerns coming into this movie was the portions of the book where you do get a glimpse into this person just kind of sucks. Yes, he's had a rough childhood, but who hasn't? And he sucks. He's a bad person. Most of that stuff, those hints at those things at the turn of what's going to come are like internal monologue kind of moments. And yeah. Him being like there's a moment in the book where he like expresses internally he's thinking and kind of rolling it out his eyes at like music in general. Like he's just like, ugh, when are they going to stop playing music and things like that. And it's like, right. But like you're quote unquote in love with the person whose entire life is music. So that's probably not going to go great. You know, things like that. That stuff, a lot of it is like I said, internal monologue or sort of subtly hinted at more than just outright here are things that he is saying and doing and whatnot. And instead the movie ends up relying on kind of like, well, he murdered that one kid who was trying to stab him in the arena and things like that. So I don't know. I don't know how successful they were at conveying that. And that was kind of a concern I had coming in, that maybe the book readers of the book would have a little more context to kind of contextualize, why this person was, why Snow is a bad person from the jump, not just he turns into that. And I don't think any of us are, like I said, I don't think any of us are uber interested anymore, if we ever were, in origin stories of how terrible people became terrible people. It's just not really super high on my list of what I want in a prequel.
The Star Wars prequel.
As George
treatment.
Lucas, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Right, right. Okay.
You like Darth Vader? Now you get to see him be a little kid.
Yes, that's how it happened. Richard, general thoughts on Hunger Games: Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes or something?
Well, originally, I remember going to see these, at least a couple of them, because they are of the, whatever, hundreds of movies that we have seen in theaters for this silly little show. I think two of the seven my wife has joined me on were these. It's like this, Gone Girl, a couple others maybe. But so I thought, yeah, I've seen these. Cool. I know this world, whatever. And then I'm reminded of when I was in college, because of my schedule, I had to take for foreign language credit, just because how it worked out with wanting to graduate on time and stuff. I took ASL. Mm-hmm. And we had to memorize these kind of speeches in ASL. They were like quarterly, you know, as we went through each semester. Like once a month, you'd have to do like, started off with 30 seconds. By the end of the fourth semester, you're doing like 10 minutes of, and I would basically write a speech and then look up the signs for it and memorize it like a dance, right? Mm-hmm. And within 30 seconds of walking out of that classroom doing it, it was out of my brain. Like, I didn't know it at all. I don't speak ASL. You could spell my name in ASL and I wouldn't remember that. That's no insult. I think ASL is an awesome, really interesting thing. But for some reason, it did not stick. I could learn it. I made A's and did fine for the test, and it was immediately gone. And I have not felt that feeling until I watched this, and I didn't remember any. I was so lost. I mean, not lost. The movie exists on its own, and you go, like, okay.
I agree, Richard.
That's right.
I felt so lost. Watching this.
Like halfway through, you're like, oh, that's
this is
that guy
super
is.
Dense. Like, the world is so dense, and that's, it shouldn't be that way because it feels very simple on the surface. I don't know if that's a compliment or a insult to this movie, that it feels like I need to, when I left this, I was like, I need to go read all the books to basically understand the context of what I just saw.
So I was a little confused. I mean, not confused. Still totally fine linear plot that makes sense. But like a lot of things they're referencing, I'm sure I missed some stuff, but I had to really think through. And then like deep dive Wikipedia when I came out and go, oh yeah, 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 that's right. That's right. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yes. That's right. Donald Sutherland is in those. Yeah, right. That's right. I hated that guy. You know, like came back in a weird wave that did not come back as I was watching the theater, which is my fault. That's not a critique of the movie. Okay. All right. Confession alert. When we talk about this movie, I don't like Rachel Zegler. Sorry.
Man, half the Discord's going to be real upset at you, but that's fine. You already did your check-in for this quarter.
Yeah,
so
I said sup.
And at least one-third of this podcast, too.
Right.
I know. We're not on speaking
terms. I think probably two-thirds, right? You guys are team. Don't get it.
I don't know if Brian is currently, but...
I like her a lot. I do, yeah. I don't think she's a movie star.
I do.
I think that she is a... I love her voice. I liked her voice less in this than West Side Story because she's doing the kind of, you know, Southern accent, I guess, sort of, which is not quite right on her, but that's fine. Like, I'm not Bill Simmonsing about a Boston accent that doesn't, I feel like that's ultra loser.
Yeah, he's doing it, totally doing it wrong. It's more like, yeah, what did that? Yeah. So, yeah, so, but on the whole, I actually, I'm not arguing with you, Brian, but like, I found, kind of origin of all of this, and not so much the origin of the character. I didn't like, you know, that's a little Anakin-y, but like the origin of how it all played out and what the situation was that that caused that rise in him to be interesting. I found that I did find it interesting. It made me want to watch the other ones again. It really did. So it served that purpose.
Sure.
And I haven't yet, and I probably won't. But I want to. And that's what counts.
Right. Right. That's the important thing here. Yeah.
That's their call to action. But I didn't find her as a compelling sort of muse for him or foe for him and everything kind of presents. But but I did. I found that actor, Tom Blythe. Is that how I say it? Blythe?
Yeah,
Blythe?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, you're all in. Like him. That's a tough character. I thought he did. He did it almost too charming. Like I said, maybe he didn't actually execute the assignment because Sutherland's so hateable in that role. And I found him a little more endearing. And I think that's kind of the point, but I like him a lot. I mean, we have kind of a glut of creepy looking dudes like in a world of Dane DeHaan. Do we need this guy? But I don't know, but maybe we do, you know, but he was very good in this and charming and creepy. And
I hadn't thought of Dane DeHaan in a long time. And then I was watching the GameStop movie last week, Dumb Money. And he's like the ninth billed actor in that.
He popped up. He was in Oppenheimer. Oh, we talked about him in Oppenheimer.
Yeah. 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 I know him. That's right. I forgot he was part of, so maybe this is his lot in life for me personally, is that every 6 to 18 months, he'll pop up in a movie and be like, oh, right, that guy. Oh, okay. All right. And just go back to not remembering him anymore. Yeah. To your point, Kent, I think the thing that these movies, these books have going for them more than anything else, in my opinion, is just the world. I think the world's interesting.
Yeah.
And,
same.
And kind of fun. Totally. Setting aside kids killing kids, there's a lot of interesting bits in here and like how we got to all of these things and the development. That was the part of the book that I found the most interesting was
it's like a realistic post-apocalyptic thing with,
for sure,
Ken's point, without a whole lot of fantasy or anything, but it kind of scratches the fantasy itch in a weird way because of how like bare bones they have to get back to fight back. But it isn't that. It doesn't.
You can strip out all of the.
There's no orc.
Right.
All of the attempted magic in this of the mockingjays and you know, basically the mythology of this and just at the surface of the class dynamic is great and can be anything they want it to be. I don't know why it has to lean so far into the kind of whimsical nature of this. It's trying to be too much to be Harry Potter or something like that. It doesn't have to be. It can be its own thing, or Twilight.
Yeah, I would. I don't see it. I don't see the Harry Potter connection at all, because there's no magic here, like at all. It's all technology. So that, you know, but yeah, it's like Maze Runner and on down the line of like Divergent, even that kind of try, like Harry Potter in a lot of ways. Harry Potter and then Twilight kind of brought YA into the mainstream in a lot of ways, or made it a huge, a much more successful thing. And then I think a lot more of the books that came after were closer tied to Twilight and then Hunger Games than they were to Harry Potter. There's plenty of Harry Potter knockoffs, don't get me wrong, but
Twilight for sure.
Yeah, but there's way more.
It's like you can see the evolution from Harry Potter to Twilight to this.
Sure. Yeah, okay. I can see that. I like the mix of like kind of old technology with new technology. That's always a thing I dig in science fiction and fantasy, when fantasy wants to touch on that. I hate steampunk, and this steers, I think, does a pretty good job of like kind of, there's like steampunk elements, but it doesn't really lean into it.
It's more in this because it's older, right? I didn't feel like that in the later Hunger Games felt futuristic. This feels more, steampunky.
Right. So this is like 65 years before
the
first Hunger Games movie. So, that kind of, like when you get those shots of the Capitol and you see kind of stylistically speaking, older looking cars and some of the fashion and whatnot, I think I like that. I always enjoy the bit of old has become new, and this is kind of the trend on all these things, technologically and fashion, all that kind of stuff. This thing is pretty cool. So I love the world. I think the world's really interesting, and there's a lot that can be done here. And it's pretty relatively open too, which is cool. And I dig all of that. I really like Rachel Zegler. I like her in this role too. I like her, like I said, more in West Side Story, but I don't know, Kent. Highest stock.
This movie was more challenging on her instrument. I saw her said that, and I was just like,
She. I saw that she turned this down, and they kind of came after her a few more times. She ended up doing it. I wonder why she initially turned this down, because it seemed. I know she attempted to get on the franchise train with Shazam, and that didn't work out. Liked her way more in this. This seems way more suiting of showing off her talents than Shazam would, in terms of the songs and the acting and the age group it's going after, all that kind of stuff, fan base it's going after. I mean, this is a girl who's done what, two movies? And aside from that, the last thing she had done was her senior play production of Shrek the Musical. Like, she has no experience and is only going to get better. I think she's legitimately good actress. Like, I thought a lot of the scenes of just the way she was mistreated, I thought she handled that like a professional actress did it. And not to mention, guys, I think her voice is heavenly, like just like, you know, God himself kind of had a hand in the vocal cord process kind of things. I mean, it's
a combination of Fergie and Jesus, you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, her voice sounds so much like Olivia Rodrigo, and I didn't realize it until this movie. And it's funny because Olivia does the soundtrack theme song to this movie.
She does,
Their voices are very similar. And Olivia, like you guys know, I think she's got a one of a kind voice too. So
yeah,
you stack all that, and then yeah, the years, if she gets the right material. I mean, she did work with Spielberg, but I feel like if there's a director who can utilize her singing ability and just with a little bit of acting, I think she's gonna have a really strong career. And yeah. This is just a step in the right direction. I'm surprised that this made as much as it has, because I didn't know if people wanted another Hunger Games movie, and I thought the Rachel Zegler backlash was going to affect it way more than it has. And I'm happy to know that there might not be as much backlash as we thought with her and the Snow White fan backlash and all that.
That will be interesting to see what comes with that.
We'll see. Disney can trigger people in weird ways. Both sides, right?
Right. Yeah, that could be.
It can, but they were coming after her. What she was saying about, oh, here's what the movie is. They were coming directly at her.
Yeah. I just think that's online. You know what I mean? Like, that's just,
crap. I'm glad it is. I'm glad this movie made money and Rachel Zegler can have a career. Because if this had tanked, they would have pointed to that. Like, oh, well, Zegler is tainted. You know, don't cast her in your movie because the online bros don't like her and they'll make sure everything she does fails, you know? So,
yeah. No, I think she's very good. She's very good in this. I'm with you on the singing, especially because she's an incredible, incredible singer. I just don't think she's a movie star in the terms of, and that's fine because there are not any movie stars. So none that are under the age of 70, you know? So, I'm not sure you put her face on a poster and it brings people to the theater, and that's okay. I don't think it's an insult to.
If she had been in La La Land, I mean, come on.
Yeah. But no, I don't think anybody goes to see that movie for her. Honestly, I mean,
for
some
her.
Do, but not like not mass audiences. I think I think this is proof that people will go see. It's still just it's the property. This was a property win for the studio more than the faces and on the poster.
Yeah,
and again, that's fine because especially if you're a studio, you'll take any win you can get. And but also this, it's made $100 million in 2 weeks. Basically, I mean, that's not going to get Hollywood excited. I mean, it's a big win as compared to a lot of the other movies that we've seen in 2023. But I mean, if you go back and you look at the box office for these first series of movies, this is by far the lowest of the five, excuse me. So, but that's, that's how much of that is the movie? How much of that is just like, this is the
it's
reality?
The time. It's the reality. I mean, this movie's already made $100 million more than it cost. It cost $100. It's made $200. Yeah, that's a win in 2023. Yeah, already.
It is. It definitely is. It's not like a salve for the industry, you know?
Well, speaking of that, I'm saying. Why was this 2.5 hours? Why didn't they split this into two? They must have thought this wasn't going to make money or were scared it wasn't going to make money because there's clearly enough material here and in the book for two movies. It felt crammed. To me, it should have ended when Snow gets kind of exiled for cheating. He could have a whole nother movie of him kind of in the wilderness and doing that whole bit and, delusions, all that. Could have been a whole nother thing.
I think the main reason they didn't do that is because it was such a huge mistake with the last one. And Francis Lawrence, the director, has said as much through the course of this like press tour of like, if I was making Mockingjay today, I would never in a million years cut it into two movies. That was a mistake. They made a lot of money out of that two movies. But if you having watched those last week or whatever, it's one movie. It's one movie that's been cut into two parts.
Yep.
You are definitely right, Ken. And I felt that watching or reading the book, I was like, this might be much, much more geared to a two-part book a two-part movie than Mockingjay was. So it is a little bit surprising maybe that they didn't go that route. Because it does feel like two like distinct, like reading the book, the Hunger Games ends and I'm like, geez, I got like 8 hours left or 6 hours left on this thing. Like, what are we doing for the next 6 hours? Okay, well, here we go. It's a whole nother story that comes into play at that point. So you're right. Yeah, I think it could have been two movies pretty easily, but I think that's just a direct result of the last time was a mistake. So I'm with you, Richard. I thought Tom Blythe was really good. I didn't love the Slim Shady look at the end. That was the part that kind of lost me just a little bit, just on the look. He started to look a little, maybe intentionally is looking a little smarmy, but also was just kind of looking like, I don't know, this guy turns into the dictator. I'm not really sure that I totally buy that, but that's just kind of, that's more of a look aesthetic thing than anything else. Performance wise, I thought he was very good. And the two of them, I thought had, it wasn't like perfect chemistry, but in some ways I feel like that's appropriate for this movie because it's not a situation where you would develop great chemistry, right? Like I think it fits with the dynamic of these two characters on screen and the way that they meet and come together and sort of first form an alliance before anything else, and how that would potentially not necessarily translate to some great romance or whatever, chemistry wise. That wasn't a knock to me. It was like kind of a, yeah, that's fine. That fits. It fits with what we're doing here.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What else? Viola Davis, always a treat. Kind of weird to see her play like a full-on really, really bad villain, not like the Amanda Waller villain in the Suicide Squad movies. She was really effectively creepy and eccentric, and I always love, she's one of my favorites. I always love Viola Davis. What'd you think of her turn here, Richard?
Really, really good and insane in a good way. Like they pulled it off. High tightrope here. But yeah, for sure.
She was great. Kent, you mentioned Schwartzman, Dinklage, this whole like very well-rounded, respected, good acting cast. What sticks out to you with this supporting cast here, with these guys? And what makes the Schwartzman was super interesting, super fun, entertaining. It's like sobering watching him do this routine while, again, literally children are dying on the screens in front of them and stuff. But it's kind of surreal and sobering, but he's great in the role and on down the list. What sticks out to you?
I mean, the entire dynamic of the Hunger Games, the point of it, or at least the point from the creator's standpoint, and in this version of, oh, we really want to play up the ratings. So we're going to be judging on popularity and ratings more than we are on who actually wins the game. Mm-hmm. Like, and so them having to broadcast that is very creepy. I wouldn't have thought that Schwartzman and Stanley Tucci could play off each other so well, but there it was. Mm-hmm. And I thought Schwartzman was perfectly cast, and each iteration of what he brought was excellent. Couldn't have asked for more from the supporting cast. And I mean, Dinklage was great. That seemed like a perfect, almost written for him. Didn't she write this book a few years ago?
Yeah.
She wrote this book with like, oh, we're going to cast Peter Dinklage in this role. It seemed like almost like all the dialogue and everything seems like perfect for Dinklage and what he, almost that Shakespearean kind of delivery that he brings.
Dinklage is great. I was pumped when I saw that when I read this book and was like, oh, that's the Dinklage character. Okay, that's going to be, because you're right, Kent. Like, it does feel like it was written for him. He, to me, his character is one of the great misses of this book. And then a little bit in the movie, there's a lot of depth there. And it kind of gets, it's not even the B story. It's kind of like the C or D story within the book. I wish that it had been fleshed out more. And then that kind of comes to fruition again. In the movie, it's like two lines of dialogue to be like, oh, by the way, I was your father's best friend and he ruined my life with these things. I think that could have been, I wish that would, for all the time that we spent in the theater on this thing, you know, because it's a very long movie. I wish we could have had a little more time spent on that character, just kind of fleshing out what's going on there, because I think there's some I think there was some good story elements there, and they didn't really get to the screen. But they're also not super on the page either. So that's part of the deal. Let's see. We talked about the world. The world's really good. Dig that. Enjoy that segment. I don't know what future plans are for this thing as far as world building goes, or you know, future movies and whatnot. At this point, it doesn't sound like she has any plans for another book, and I don't know if she has total control to where they're not going to make any more movies until
they can't Patterson her. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I have no idea. I don't know where that stands. I would imagine the studio is like, hey, we'd like to do more with this. But
I think she's an executive producer of this, and the last one was written with the full intention of this is going to be a movie. But didn't all of the book, isn't all of it in this movie? Like, what else is there? Yeah. She's going to have to write another book to do another movie unless they branch it off on their own, make it a TV show. I don't know.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, you could easily do, I mean, if you're a studio, I'm not saying these are good ideas. I'm just saying, here's a studio idea. You're like, this was the 10th Hunger Games. We've seen the 74th and 75th Hunger Games. There's a whole lot of Hunger Games we could get into.
Wouldn't that be great? A TV show if each season was one of the years of the Hunger Games? I mean, sign me up for that.
Yeah. I mean, very quickly you would get into what we're running into with all of these other series and franchises and cinematic universes of,
well, just say we're not doing movies. This is going to be the Hunger Games on HBO.
Or sure,
whatever it is,
and that'll work for a year or two, you know, and then eventually it will dilute the product. And but I'm shocked that this, so that leads me to believe that maybe she has some kind of control over what gets made and what doesn't, as far as spinoffs or other ideas that get done within this world, because it is a really interesting world. And I think that's the best part of her writing. It's she did a good job of creating a cool environment, an interesting environment and world that just happens to also involve children killing children.
That she might have ripped off from Battle Royale.
From whatever Battle Royale, yeah. Yeah. Which is, bring that up as well. So, we're fully in spoilers at this point. Did the arena itself live up to your expectations? Given that it is, again, it's like 65 years before the Hunger Games movies that we know, how did that arena element work for you, Kent? Obviously you're getting a lot of like, hey, this is the first time we've done some of these things, the betting, the delivering of gifts and all the patrons and that kind of thing. But yeah, how did you feel on the action element of this thing?
I'm kind of leaning more towards the old style. Like I said, more futuristic, almost Squid Game style of arena than this. This felt just more like, oh, let's put him in a cage and throw some knives in there and bet, and maybe bet on it. Yeah, they didn't even come up with that until a little bit later in the movie. But yeah, I'm more for the evolved version of the Hunger Games.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you too. I mean, I think part of that is just how much of this is not even really about the arena and the Hunger Games itself as much as it is the development of the Hunger Games and what it means. And then obviously this character and what he will become in the future. I did like the kind of the little notes of like seeing where this will go and how what it will become over the next 60 plus years with like the betting and the patronage and the it turning into, I mean, they kind of hint at this used to be like a 24 to 36 hour event and now it's weeks or days and potentially weeks long and stuff like that. That's a cool little thing, like a little tease of like, okay, here's where we're going to move forward in the movies and books that we know already. So it was interesting concept to see how that all comes through. Thought the snake scene was really good, really creepy. Richard, anything from the arena that sticks out as a pro or con here?
I could have used more of it. I thought, I mean, it's hard to say you want more in a US, on a 2.5 hour movie, but I could have used more of that and less of the like loot plane romanticism. Like, cause you know, that's why I'm there in a movie theater. But sure. Yeah, no,
But it, the stuff that worked was great. I mean, I actually thought the action was pretty cool and not too, you know, these kind of movies always worry me that like it'll have that cheap like tier two effects piece, and it didn't really to me. I thought it actually felt well produced.
Yeah, I agree. I think the production value at least feels a lot of like practical stuff, but you don't feel I mean, in my opinion, this is so much more than what they're doing with Fantastic Beasts. Like, this is way more entertaining to me than that.
Big agree. Yeah. Yeah, that's so funny because I think that the Harry Potter books are so well written as compared to these books that I don't think they're that well done, but you're exactly right, Kent. Like, man, those Fantastic Beasts movies are so uninspired and kind of lame. And the film installments of this series for the most part have been pretty solid. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot that can be done here, I think, within this concept, within this world, for sure. Yeah, that's a good point. All right. So in the back third of the movie, if not more, is all takes place in District 12, and it's Snow and his sort of romance and like signs of things to come. How does that segment of the movie work for you? I'll go to you first, Richard, and we'll get into I have one more thing I want to talk about. I don't know if you guys have other notes to bring up, but how's that back third work for you once you get to District 12?
Yeah, I mean, it works well. To your point that you said earlier, like it establishes pretty early on that like I have sup. Girl, I got them fascist tendencies. What's happening? And so, you know, it's not, he doesn't take like a drastic leap. Right. It is funny. There's like the exact kind of same scene in the field as, is it clones or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where they're like,
Attack of the Clones.
Yeah. Where she realizes that this handsome blonde boy, you know, has got some controversial political,
some problematic tendencies. Yeah,
exactly. They're like in the exact same setting. I'm gonna take Sarah.
He also does not enjoy sand. Yeah, you're saying. Yeah,
uh-huh. I'm gonna take Sarah there in a couple weeks.
I did not realize that. That's so true.
She'll find out about my. I got a few hot takes. But I thought that pays off pretty well, and it makes him. He did a good job of telling that story as an actor, and the writing does a good job too of, you kind of get there pretty organically. By the time we're getting there to District 12, he's pretty heinous, and then you go, wow, this guy's going to just keep getting more and more heinous over the next 50 years, isn't he? All right, let's ride.
Sure.
And he's going to give us Kiefer, so that's
cool. Right.
Could we not have focused on, I mean, she writes what she wants to write about, but could we not have focused on like Katniss's family history or the protagonist's like backstory?
I got to be honest with you, I'm the opposite on that. I'm glad that it didn't get Skywalkered, where everything has to fit within the Skywalker saga or the Everdeen saga. I was nervous reading the book that there was going to be some stupid kind of forced, and here's the Katniss of it all, and really all it is it turns out that she's named after a swamp potato or something.
Yeah, same.
And I was glad for that, and I then after reading the book I was like, they're definitely gonna do it in the movie, right? They're gonna do some kind of some direct correlation weird thing, like, by the way, Lucy Gray's her great-grandmother or something like that. And I'm thankful that we did not get that personally. I don't need the Rey connection to Palpatine / Skywalker or whatever else, right, kind of bit personally. That's a lesson learned, I think, for me anyway. How'd you feel in District 12 with the way that all turns out with Snow and Lucy Gray?
Yeah, I agree. I wish that would have been the second movie. I was so tired at that point, and
I'm with you.
You know where it's going, and then once it gets there, it's like, oh, God. I remember looking down at like the trial scene where he's getting sentenced to District 12, and it was like another hour left. I was like, oh, man, God.
Yeah.
This really, I mean, 20 more minutes, and you got another movie. I mean, he could have stretched it a little further, a couple deleted scenes, boom. But there you are. Yeah.
I do. Like
I agree with you. The Slim Shady side of it was pretty funny, but it made me want to watch that Billy the Kid show that he's in.
Yeah, that's like his only credit, really. Yeah. And I've seen ads for it, but I've never seen the show. He's very good.
Isn't Jeremy Allen White about to play him in a movie or something?
Yeah,
that sounds right.
From the Bear, kid from the Bear.
Yeah, God, the Bear's so good. To be honest, I was knowing Ziegler and knowing again, while I don't think she's necessarily a movie star, I think she is very, very good. And then not really knowing anything about this guy, kind of worried that she was gonna just completely eat him up and he wouldn't have anything on screen that works, or he just feels overshadowed or whatever. But I didn't. I thought more than held his own. I thought he was very good and gives you a really good taste of like, yeah, this guy, again, he becomes, you kind of see, obviously you see the behaviors and the tendencies and all that sort of stuff, but you also get a good glimpse into like, you really can't become this level of dictator without some kind of charisma and appeal and whatnot. Especially, you know, kind of as it starts, you can't just come out of the gate being like, let's kill kids, you know? You gotta work that in later. I think he fulfilled that really well. Did a great job of it.
It's Barry. One of my Barry major Keoghan is playing Billy the Kid.
I would never trust Barry Keoghan or Keegan probably. I would never trust him. This guy might fool me. I don't know. Lindsay loves to watch cult shows. I don't know if you guys know this. Like any 3-part Netflix special on a cult, Lindsay's like, that's our next show. Same. That's what we're watching. And 95% of the time, just like, these are the stupidest people in the world. Yeah. There's no way anyone should fall for this freak show. And then every once in a while, one of the ones we watch, I'm like, I kind of get it. I understand why these people fell for this. Like, this guy's really charismatic. I understand. This one, this guy has it a little bit. This character, you can kind of see how this becomes becomes.
Yep, for sure.
Which is cool. That's a, you know, that could have been that the whole thing. Anakin misses, I think, not, if that right? character doesn't feel that. Right. Last thing for me, this is really more a criticism of the book than the movie, although the movie just does the exact same thing. I felt like the twist at the end, where it goes from, not only are we so in love, we are so in love that I'm going to leave all this behind and move to Canada or something with you. And then he finds the guns, and 1 second later, he tries to murder her. Like, it is the quickest switch of a flip of a switch, ever. And it kind of,
I think he was just trying to murder the Mockingjays. Like, same, bro.
Yeah, it's like really quick. And I was kind of hoping the movie, because I do think there are moments, especially Catching Fire is better, if not much better, than the book is. And some of that is like choices that were made to kind of like, hey, maybe we buff this up a little bit, make this a little stronger. I was kind of hoping we'd get something here that's a little stronger than it was in the book, and they didn't. It's pretty much straight on what was in the book. So it's a light criticism, but yeah, it feels like one page in the book. He's like, all right, I'm done. It's time to do some murder. But so it's a little criticism there. But overall, you know, you're seeing who this person is throughout the course of it, and so it is what it is. Any last thoughts, or you guys want to grade this thing and weekly recommend it and get on out of here?
Let's
grade it.
All right, Kent, I'm going to go to you first.
Yeah, I like this world. I didn't think this was a good adaptation of the book. I thought the dialogue was just explaining the plot for 2 hours. Yeah. It was dialogue that was in service of the plot instead of serving the plot, if that makes sense. And so I take a little bit off of that. I'll give it a B+. I do like this world. Okay.
Super fair. Richard?
I'll go a little lower than that. There was some tacky stuff in it, but I really liked Snow's performance and all of that, so Blythe's performance, whatever. I'm going to go B-.
Okay. A little higher than both of you. It's a weird... For me, it's a movie that feels a little greater than the sum of its parts in places. Like, I had a good time with it. I enjoyed it. It is, and then I think about like all the criticism, like, yeah, it is too long. There are some kind of crappy story. I mean, you said, would you say cheesy, Richard, or tacky? Yeah, totally. There's some little notes here and there that don't really work. But overall, I still feel like it was a strong entry into it. And I ended up just being like, I just liked the movie. So I'm gonna go a little higher. I'm gonna give it an A-. It's getting really good. I mean, like, it's Rotten Tomatoes was fine, but amongst the audience and within like our own Discord, most of the grades here have been yeah. like 3.5 stars and higher. So
it's great.
It's played well with the audience, and it's good. You know, it's nice to have a movie that actually is sort of successful financially. Yeah. It's good for the industry. Turns out that helps. Just as a whole, I like that. All right, cool. And we'll see what happens with this thing moving forward. Again, I just Googled it. Suzanne Collins is saying no future plans at this point for more books, but you know, beach houses need to be built and stuff. Heck yeah. So maybe that changes before too long. We'll see. We'll see what comes out of this as we move forward. All right. Before we go, let's do a quick weekly
recommends.
Richard, I'm gonna go to you first, my friend. What's your weekly recommend?
Man, it's been a content rich fall, even with the strike and everything. A lot going on, a lot of options. But I'm trying to decide between a couple books here. You know what? I'm going to recommend I'm going to recommend a book that you guys would like, both of you, I think, for different reasons. It is a dorky soccer book, but Lars Sivertsen, who Dallas's own on radio, our Norwegian soccer expert here in Dallas, wrote and is a friend. It's the only person I really tweet with a lot. But he wrote the definitive biography of Erling Haaland that's actually doing really well. And he's listened to Mad About Movies before. So we've got a friend with a book out. So we'll recommend that. It's a really interesting book on not just Haaland's incredible crazy rise when he's young. He's like a 21-year-old soccer phenom, but really the like Norwegian sporting culture and kind of actual overall culture that kind of raised him. And it's really, really interesting. That all that stuff's great, and the background, all that, and then the great background of all the clubs he's played for, Molde and Borussia Dortmund and Manchester City, is really interesting as well. So it's a really well-researched, great sports biography, and we love Lars, so we ride for Lars, and I'll recommend that. Haaland by nice. Lars Sivertsen.
Very nice. Very nice. Love that. Love to support a friend of the show.
Yeah.
Richard. No, not Richard.
I can go again. I got, let's see, what else we got?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that was such a good one. Give us another, bud. Kent, what's your weekly recommend?
Yeah, well, definitely... A lot less intellectual than Richard's recommend. But
I wouldn't say it's a silly soccer book, but it's done well.
Well, it's a book. Yeah, so sure. I'm going with a guilty pleasure movie, guys. Have to recommend Good Burger 2.
Oh, is it nice. Out? I want to watch it real bad.
It is out.
It's on Paramount?
And it's, yeah. Paramount Plus. It's definitely like a kid's movie in tone and feel and all that. I mean, it's just like Good Burger. But I got to admit, it's had me smile a couple times. A couple of great, great nostalgic callbacks to the original Sinbad 90s kids, all that kind of stuff. Sinbad is not in it. I will spoil
that's
that.
A whiff.
But there are some great callbacks to the original movie that I will not spoil. But that would have been a great one. Mr. Wheat. Yeah, but great to see Kel Mitchell doing his thing. And then Keenan this is it. He's just doing Good Burger stuff whenever they call him.
I meant Sinbad. Like, what's Sinbad?
Sinbad?
I don't think he's doing well. I feel like I saw...
Oh, he is the voice.
Never believe how bad Sinbad looks.
He voices the business manager on the phone.
I will spoil one cameo for the sake of the podcast, because I need your reaction to it.
Exactly what you're gonna say.
The a cameo from the former Mavs owner,
yeah,
plays a role in the movie. Let's just say that.
Don Carter, you old.
I was gonna say
he sold the team to pursue an acting career, because I saw his work in Good Burger too, and
he's got Entourage. He's got Good Burger too. Like, things are looking up.
But yeah, no, if you'll only appreciate it if you were a kid and saw the original. I would not recommend this to anyone who has no context, basically.
I
mean,
I went out to see my dad in Phoenix when this came out, the first Good Burger. And I, you know, he didn't know what to do with me, which is totally understandable. And I was like, we'll go see Good Burger. So he went and sat through Good Burger as an adult with just me laughing. And then like 3 days later, he ran out of ideas and stuff to do with me. So we went and saw Good Burger again. I remember that.
That's fun. It's fun times. All right. I'm going to recommend a movie I watched today. I think I'm the first of the three of us to see this. I won't go into too much depth on the recommend because I imagine we'll do an episode at some point. I watched The Holdovers today. And it ruled. Alexander Payne's back, baby.
Okay,
it
nice.
Was so you're so
sobbing.
Good.
Add it to the list.
Yeah, it definitely made. Yeah, it got a tier or three. It's very good. It's very good and has three of the better performances I've seen this year. So yeah, you guys will. I think you guys will both really dig it. So, and I'm sure. Usually, if you're new to this thing, to this Mad About Movies, this crazy wild ride that is Mad About Movies, January, February, we usually do some like catch up reviews on the movies that are Oscar nominated or Oscar contenders and stuff. I imagine Holdovers will be one of those.
Well, you'll get episodes on all of them.
Yeah.
We
could have that in like a week or two because there's usually kind of some dead zone at the top of December. So sometimes we'll do those there. But movies that are going to be nominated for Best Actor and Best Actress, Best Picture, that kind of thing, usually we'll do our best to get. We'll get an episode on each of those.
They all decide to come out a lot of times on Christmas Day here, you know, because we don't get to live in one of the big metropolitan areas like your New York, like your LA, like your St. Paul, Minnesota's that get them all early. So we have to wait till Christmas Day a lot of times to get them. So that's why we'll do them if, you know, we can get our hands on them beforehand because we do like to space them out. But normally we have suddenly a list of 14 movies to see. That's the only thing I like. I hate that the Oscars are in March, but it does help us. Like, it would really suck if the Oscars were like, it would be better for everyone else because it makes more sense, but it would suck for us if the Oscars were like January 18th.
Yeah.
Because we have to see,
it's time to get our list together. Yeah. And like, also, if you're new to this show and everything Mad About Movies, we usually do our like end of year best and worst, usually the last week of January, because it takes a while to get caught up on all
again,
because
we're not St. Paul residents. We don't get to be that lucky.
If only, you know.
They got holdovers like 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, they've just been sitting on it. Like, when are you guys going to see
that? Oh, gosh, we're real trying. Good. You know, that Giamatti's great. He's great. I liked him. You know, you ever seen Sideways? You know, I've always wanted to go to Napa, but it's a little spendy. Yeah. I just offended.
Best part of the movie was his character makes a joke about smelling bad. I'm like, he's listening to the show.
Good fan of the pod, Paul Giamatti.
He gets it. Cool.
Is there any BDSM in it or no?
Not yet. Okay. Maybe in the outtakes. I don't know.
Nice.
All right. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, well, guess what? We have even more. Go to madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. Sign up for our VIP content on Patreon. And you'll get an extra episode every single week, a throwback or a retrospective. Sometimes we do fun bonus episodes. Sometimes we do AMAs. We do all kinds of cool stuff over in the VIP. And there are literally hundreds of episodes at your disposal there. And a new one comes out pretty much every single week. You also get access to our exclusive Discord where you can talk to movie fans like you all over the world. Like all day you can be in conversation with these people and they can become your new family. You don't have to see your family on Thanksgiving. That's you can just talk to all the people in the Discord. And isn't that really the dream? Isn't that what we're all looking for? That's the dream. All right. Next week, I don't know. We might do Napoleon. We might do The Holdovers. Who knows? This is the wild time of year where there's, like Richard said, there's 400 movies out. And kind of, we never really know what we're going to do until like 3 days before we do a movie review. So keep on your toes for that. The throwback this week in the VIP is Kent and Richard on The Graduate, I believe, as well as a retrospective on the disaster that is John Carter. Very much looking forward to that conversation as well. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And we'll see you in the summer.
Hey baby, I hear the blues are calling, tossed salads and scrambled eggs. and maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya. The salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.